You're listening to The Top Line, brought to you by Fierce Pharma and Fierce Biotech. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. At Fierce Biotech, we love a big M&A deal, but valuation does not always equal the most exciting. In today's episode, Fierce Biotech's Anna Lee Armstrong and James Waldron discuss what they think are the best and smartest acquisitions in recent years. From obesity to radiopharmaceuticals, they give you the Fierce Biotech team's thoughts on who got the best deal. Let's dive into the conversation now.
Welcome to The Top Line. We are here today to discuss a special report that the Fierce Biotech team did that recounts what we think are the best and smartest deals in biotech. Now, our Fierce Pharma colleagues already do an M&A rundown that ranks these deals by size and the actual dollar amount. But we wanted to dig into what we think are actually the smartest deals, the deals that we see shaping the future of biotech. So we did just that. We did a top 10 list, which came out a little while ago. And that project was led by James Waldron, who's here with me today. James, how's it going?
Hi, Annalee. Yeah, I'm really excited for us to chat about this feature because I think it was a really fun assignment, and I think it's a potentially slightly controversial assignment because you gave us a broad overview on thinking what our top 10 smartest deals in biotech and pharma are. And I think we had a lot of conversations about, well, how do we define smart? So we both threw in a few different ideas here. And hopefully readers will have a chance to have already read the feature, but a bit of background to how we came up with the criteria. You know, as you said, there's no point in just running through just the biggest deals by financial markers there, because our sister publication, Fierce Pharma, does a great job at already covering that. So what do we mean by smart or interesting deals? One way we looked at it was trying to think about whether deals have subsequently produced any exciting data. So a good example of that in the piece would be Novartis buying out Chinook Therapeutics, which within 4 months of that deal coming to light, you know, had produced some really positive phase 3 kidney disease data. So, you know, a good marker that while there was quite a high biobuck value attached to that deal, it was already looking like it was paying off. And another one, which I think you'll be talking about a bit more later, was Bristol Myers' acquisition of Karuna, where, you know, that brought in an asset that's very close to what could be a really globally historic approval in schizophrenia. So that's exciting. And then there's also deals that maybe in their own seem a bit more a standard acquisition, but open up potential for exciting combo treatments or a chance for big pharma to really maybe stretch its remit separately. So Roche's acquisition of Carmot Therapeutics is another one that really caught my eye. And then there was also, we wanted to take a bit of look at some of the market leaders in certain spaces, most notably both Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, those real trendsetters when it comes to obesity at the moment. They've already had these big successes with their GLP-1 drugs, but the question we've been looking at is where are they going next? And I think some of the smartest deals are where you see some of the biggest and most successful companies have to take a bit of a gamble and try and work out, you know, where their future success comes from.
So it seems very fitting to start our discussion with the obesity biotechs, which have been the talk of the biotech town to speak. So the first deal I want to talk about is Eli Lilly and Versanis. This one seemed like a no-brainer for Lilly, which is, as you mentioned, one of the two market leaders in obesity with Zepbound. The company has absolutely not been shy about wanting to dominate in this space. So the acquisition of Versanis was just a natural fit. Versanis was really a tiny deal when you think about it. It was just $1.92 billion, which to me is a lot of money. But for Lilly, that's pocket change. We were, I think, when this deal broke, pretty surprised by how small it was. But at the same time, there are some pretty amazing assets at the heart of it. This has been developing bimagrumab in combination with rival GLP-1 maker Novo Nordisk's semaglutide, which is known as Wegovy for weight loss, of course. Lilly sees the potential for that med to combine instead with tirzepatide to create more healthy weight loss while maintaining muscle mass. That has become the focus of biotech's role in obesity, which is dominated by these huge big pharma companies. They believe that they can maybe do some combinations that can make the weight loss healthier, which is going to be key in this next kind of second wave of the market. So one other very interesting part of this deal, which I really love to read about, is that bimagrumab was actually licensed from Novartis in 2021 as Versanis was formed. So there's lots of big pharma juggling involved there. We always love to see that. And that made this deal all the more interesting. So James, what is another of the standouts that we singled out from the obesity space?
You mentioned a market leader there in terms of Eli Lilly. Actually, I thought Roche's attempt to get into the obesity space really merited a list. One thing that really stood out to me about Roche's acquisition of Carmot was the negotiating strategy they took on in this case. We knew that Carmot was actually gearing up for an IPO, and we were very much had our eyes on that. It was one of the kind of few IPOs scheduled for 2023. And then we were all surprised to find out that Roche had actually been running secret negotiations in the background the whole time to acquire that biotech.
A dual track process. Very exciting.
Exactly. So eventually they did, of course, buy the biotech. The news came out. They put down $2.7 billion upfront, I think it was, in December 2023. And for that money, what they got was a pipeline of subcutaneous and oral incretins, which included once weekly and once daily injectable dual GLP-1 and GIP receptor agonists, which are currently in phase two trials. At least two of those candidates are. Now, the first kind of sense we got that maybe this had been quite a smart deal was when we got some 24-week data from a phase 1b study in May this year, which showed that the once weekly injectable candidate had produced an average 18.8% weight loss in patients. So while early days, that really is efficacy level, which they can continue to demonstrate it in later stage trials, shows it could easily hold its own against some of the more established candidates already in the space.
And I think they have some more plans for the assets, right?
Yeah, so that's the other reason why I thought this was such a fascinating deal, is Roche hasn't been afraid to talk about the potential for those Carmot assets as kind of combo treatments. And most specifically, this anti-myostatin antibody, which they've been studying already from their own pipeline in spinal muscular atrophy. So the hope is that by adding this drug for a muscle wasting condition to those Carmot assets, what they can do is try and tackle what's becoming the next big barrier for obesity treatments, which is managing to get that all-important weight loss, but without the accompanying muscle loss. We saw on a call with analysts back in February, the CEO of Roche Pharma, Theresa Graham, she was really hinting at, and I quote here, lots more to be coming out of the Carmot acquisition. So it sounds like there's some big plans there. She was, to quote her again, she was talking about that Carmot deal as being a backbone for future plays across cardiometabolism, but also potentially other disease areas as well. So not only are we seeing some really positive and quite exciting early stage obesity data from the assets that they acquired, but this definitely looks like one deal that we'll be keeping our eyes on for a while longer.
And now, a quick break for a message from one of our sponsors.
Every step in the advanced therapy development process matters. Cryoport Systems is the comprehensive supply chain partner for the life sciences industry built on a foundation of risk mitigation. Cryoport Systems excels in the specialized management of the biopharmaceutical supply chain through their comprehensive platform offerings that include logistics, bioservices, cryopreservation, and consulting services. Trust Cryoport Systems to enable the outcome of your groundbreaking discoveries and support the future of medicine. One patient, one therapy, one product at a time. Learn more at cryoport.com.
And now, back to the top line.
Anne-Lee, you know, what was another one of your standouts?
One of my favorite deals of the year was Bristol-Myers and Karuna, which you previously mentioned. I think everybody knew that Karuna was going to be bought at some point in 2023. We predicted it in our M&A target report that went out in January 2023, in fact. But the question was all year, who was going to buy Karuna? We had to wait all the way until December, but Bristol-Myers ended up buying itself a nice little Christmas gift in Karuna with a $14 billion acquisition deal. We later found out they weren't the only ones in play. Again, not surprising. I'd love to know who else was involved there, but unfortunately they were slim on details in the SEC filing.
Yeah, I remember there was a lot of speculation around that, actually. I mean, all eyes have really been on Karuna last year. And schizophrenia is just one of those areas where there's been a lot of hype about potential new treatments, and yet nothing has come through for decades. So amongst the team, we've all been eyeing up Karuna as an obvious target for a big pharma.
And at the center of the deal is KarXT, which is awaiting an FDA decision right now for schizophrenia. It could be one of the first approved medicines for that condition in decades. So sales have been estimated at about $2.8 billion by 2028. So this was a big get for Bristol Myers. James, what's another deal that made our list?
Another standout from the top 10 was from GSK and their $2 billion buyout of a Canadian biotech called Bellus Health back in August 2023. So one of the reasons I thought this was a very smart deal was it's a good example of a big pharma, how I see it, taking the fight to a competitor. So in this case, that acquisition brought on board a chronic cough candidate called camlipixant, which has the same mechanism of action as Merck's gefapixant. Now, both drugs are antagonists of something called P2X3, which is a peripheral nervous system receptor. So you can see why these are quite close competitors in the same space. Now, GSK may have seen an opening in the fact that the FDA actually turned down Merck's first approval application attempt for gefapixant back in 2022. And since GSK bought up Bellus Health, it's been pushing camlipixant through phase 3 trials with its eye on trying to secure FDA approval in 2026. And it's talked about the potential for, and I quote, significant sales through 2031 and beyond. So clearly there's big ambitions there. Another reason why it feels like this is quite a close competitor race is while Merck has managed to since secure approval in Europe for gefapixant, it actually received its second rejection from the FDA back in December. So there's every chance here that through its buyout of Bellus Health, GSK actually managed to leapfrog Merck and maybe could end up at the head of the chronic cough race.
Merck has had a really tough time with that drug. The FDA ultimately decided they hadn't proven efficacy, which was something you rarely see happen to a big pharma like that at such a late stage. So GSK is going to have its work cut out to overcome that, but they must be confident given this deal. So how soon are we going to find out whether the Bellus asset has what it takes?
Yeah, good question. So I think GSK is eyeing 2025 for readouts from its two phase 3 trials of gefapixant. Now, if the molecule is then given a warmer reception by the FDA than Merck's rival drug, which we'll all be keeping a close eye on, then it does mean that $2 billion Bellus bet has well and truly paid off.
So one thing I realized in reading back this list, James, is that we don't have a lot of cancer-focused biotechs, save for the radiopharmaceuticals deals, which clearly we have two of them on the list. We thought those were interesting. So that includes Bristol Myers' acquisition of Raise Bio and AstraZeneca buying Fusion Pharma.
It's definitely been a big year for Bristol Myers. Another deal that we definitely could have included was Mirati when Bristol Myers bought those guys. That was another big buy, and that does slot into oncology.
And big pharmas have been really hungry in the radiopharmaceutical space. Novartis is the clear leader, and now its peers are trying to get in on the game. It'll be an interesting fight to see how they follow up. And those deals are obviously a smart way to get into the business that is very complicated. You can't just become a radiopharma company. You need to have that expertise. So that's obviously what Bristol Myers and AstraZeneca saw in those two companies. So, you know, speaking of Bristol Myers, I know their CEO, Chris Boerner, just said earlier this week that they still have cash to spend on M&A. So maybe we'll see some entries for next year.
And in fact, that's a really good point, Annalie. We'd love to get readers and listeners' suggestions for future smart deals in biotech and pharma, ready to compile another list. So if you have any feedback at all, please get hold of us via email or on our social media channels, and let us know what are the smartest deals that you think we should be covering.
That's it for The Top Line. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. You can find out more about this topic in our show notes at fiercepharma.com. Look for podcasts. And that's The Bottom Line from The Top Line.